Thank you for that. That was just beautiful, that piece on hope. Thank you. I'm pretty conflicted over hope. That may be a surprise for some of you, but here I am facing into it because it is our thematic topic to wonder about this month, hope. Personally, I struggle when I look at the state of our world. It is somewhat, and I'm being a little bit gentle here, depressing. And a bit of a stretch to get to a place of hopefulness at this point in history, at least for me. In my Connector article this week, and I know that you all read it, I shared that I struggle with hope, even though I remind us in a myriad of ways on a weekly basis to find or create a place of hope in our lives. On the one hand, my rational mind wants to embrace Friedrich Nietzsche, who explained that hope is the worst of evils, for it prolongs the torments of man. In some part, I agree that hope can be a dangerous practice because it pulls our attention away from this present moment and coping with what is challenging us right now, a difficult worldview, health issues, loss, and so on. I have known times when hope has blinded me from a difficult truth or situation. Hope has the ability to stall us from dealing with challenges. Yet in my heart of hearts, I believe that hope is also an emotion that gives us the energy to live despite challenges, to love despite uncertainty, and to embrace both who we are in this moment and what we may become. So even though I struggle with hope, I still believe that hope is exactly what we so desperately need in our lives to survive and thrive. For example, I hope that humankind will ultimately get it about the delicate balance of this planet before it's really too late. Some would say it already is too late. This hope does not stop me from engaging in the work of installing solar on my house or geothermal heating or driving a Prius, buying recyclable products. I am committed and I will encourage others to make changes that have an impact on the world. That is what hope does for me. Hope comes in all shapes and sizes, especially during these short days of December. It's amazing, even though it happens every year, that I am surprised with how early the darkness comes. How I look out my window at 4:17 and we're well into dusk. I'm like, what happened? The lights are on and we cloister from the cold and the snow, and I can officially say that now. And I seek succor in readings such as what I shared with you this morning, John O'Donohue. He calls us to be accepting of the shadows, the night, the dark. That our thoughts may be true light, finding their way into words which have the weight of shadow to hold the layers of truth. He presents us with a moment of revelation held carefully within the interplay of dark and light. Could there even be the littlest bit of hopefulness? When we love, that dawn light would lighten our feet upon the waters. Yep, there it is. As we grow old, that twilight would illuminate treasure in the fields of memory. Again, sentiments of hope. We can find them everywhere if we just take a moment to look. And when we come to search for spirit or God, let us first be robed in night. I love that visual, robed in night, especially during this time of year, a time that is all about hopefulness, joy, a time that is about expectant waiting, the celebration of birth and rebirth. This is a time when the colors of gold and green and red fill our vision, and the smells of evergreen and cookies and a warm hearth fire embrace our senses, if we're lucky. Hope is what our ancestors had when winter set in. Hope that the sun would return. Our ancient people would endeavor to wake the sun, convince her to turn back north at the winter solstice. Winter was a time that was all about feast and famine. The gods and goddesses were evoked as a way to face into fears and to ask for favor. Prayers were given and sacrifices spilled. Such deities were needed to help humankind to remain hopeful. And at midwinter, when fuel and food were running low, hope and faith, music and community were at the center of survival. Such a far-off reality for us today. Maybe we've lost touch in these modern times when there is a store just down the road and a plethora of food and water that we might need at our fingertips. Even tropical fruit like bananas or pineapple are right there. Food so close that we have no longer a need for prayers or gods and goddesses to secure our survival. We are certain of our survival, right? But during this time of year, I think of those who are hungry, even though there are stores so close, or they are cold with a lack of heat. There are those who are thirsty and cannot find clean drinking water. There are those without electricity right now. I think of the many people without homes right now because of hurricanes or earthquakes or fires that have left them without basic necessities, without their family treasures, all gone. It's hard to understand such need when we are not in need ourselves. If you are in need this holiday, please come and see me. I don't want anyone to be in need. I'm daunted by how many have lost everything and are beginning again as we enter into this holiday season. It's kind of daunting. I do have to get on a soapbox. I wish I had one right now. But a side note, and I just have to say it, because I feel like I'd be irresponsible not to. Government, like churches, are here to help take care of people, not just the wealthy, and they should never, ever, 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 ever be run like a business, ever. This is the one time in our culture, in government and in church, that we are not for profit. We are for people, period. Okay, get off my soapbox. I wonder, can we resurrect the gods and goddesses to help us find the wherewithal to create a place of hopefulness in our lives? Helen Keller, a woman who faced countless hurdles in her life, once shared that optimism is the faith that leads to achievement. Nothing can be done without hope and confidence. I read that quote on a website called Life Hack, a site that shares the meanderings and shortcuts to just about anything that one might face in life. In one piece about hope, the author explained that there are five easy steps to digging out of a hole and creating hope. I was intrigued. Consider all the amazing things that you've done in your life. Regardless of what you're facing, remember your earlier triumphs and know that you are entirely capable of working through whatever. Keller helps us to realize that in the seemingly impossible is in fact possible. It is critical to change our mindset. Surround yourself with optimism. You've come across people who persistently see the bright side of things. They will always see the sunny side of every situation. I added a caveat. They will, okay, maybe not always, but more than not, those people. They will always have a smile and a positive attitude. Find a group of those people and soak up the positive emotions from them. And then I put down a little note, is First Parish such a place? And I would say yes, it is. Allow inspiration in. Find a sense of faith. It could be a great source of inspiration. Reading books, watching movies. I added the watching movies part. And listening to music that are uplifting. That can create positive vibes. If you have a positive experience or have read a good book, watched a good movie, share the wealth with others. Don't be shy. Tell people about it. Like, I watched this great movie and it made me feel like, don't be shy. We all need to share our strategies. Spend time in nature. For many, nature's bounty is awe-inspiring. From the first snow I added that part, to flowers and waterfalls, to butterflies and spiderwebs, to feeding birds, the winter feeder. When we see what's possible in this world, we realize that humankind, that we are capable of remarkable things. Be courageous. Cultivating hope requires courage to take that first step forward. Give yourself the chance to find your way through challenges. Taking that first step and then the next, and each one adds up, will help us all to get to the other side. Life Hack has some interesting articles, but personally I needed more to go on. And well, I knew that if we didn't have some cold hard facts that no one was going to jump on board. So thus I went towards research, which happens to be kind of my thing. One place that we often struggle in our lives, and many of us lose hope, is when we face a difficult diagnosis. So I sought the effects of hope in healthcare. I just thought about it. I was like, okay, so if there's going to be hope, what is it like? An article on hope in medicine, Strange Bedfellows, I Agree, explained that the positive psychological effects of hope are well documented, most eloquently in Jerome Groopman's The Anatomy of Hope, where he writes, researchers are learning that a change in mindset has the power to alter neurochemistry. Okay, that seems promising. Belief and expectation, the key elements of hope, can block pain by releasing the brain's endorphins, mimicking the effects of morphine. In some cases, hope can also have important effects on fundamental psychological processes, like respiration, circulation, and motor function. Groopman's research showed that during the course of illness, belief and expectation, two mental states associated with hope, have an impact on the nervous system, which in turn sets off a chain reaction that makes improvement and recovery more likely. This process, he points out, is fundamental to the widely accepted placebo effect, which is created by a hopeful outlook. If one is hopeful, there's an excellent chance that they will have a better outcome. For example, hope for the future is clearly linked with daily habits that support health and prevent disease. That's because hope triggers a virtuous cycle. Hopeful people conjure a vision that sustains them, like riding in a sleigh to church on a Sunday morning, that causes them to show up for the hard work and accept setbacks. They make an investment in the future that pays off in the present, in the way they eat, exercise, conserve energy, take care of themselves. There are different kinds of hope, Groopman writes. False hope does not recognize the risks and dangers that true hope does. False hope can lead to intemperate choices and flawed decision-making. True hope takes into account the real threats that exist and seeks to navigate the best path around them. Hope is not about positive thinking. Hope is half optimism. The other half is the belief in the power that you can make it so. There is a profound difference between hoping and wishing. Wishing encourages passivity, whereas hope represents an active stance. Wishing is a fantasy that everything is going to turn out okay. I just need to sit here and everything will be fine. Hoping is actually showing up and doing the hard work. Showing up for the hard work. We got this, right? Life is not easy, but we got this. Being a part of a Unitarian Universalist congregation is all about walking the talk. Even when the issues of the day aren't popular or at odds or against us, we believe that one person can make a difference in the world because we have seen it happen over and over again. From abolitionism to the Vietnam War to healthcare to the environment, we see it. We live it. Okay, maybe I am a little less conflicted about hope after writing this sermon. Maybe I do believe that hope is a good practice to cultivate as long as it leads to a place of action. Not wishing, hoping. Being the spiritual leader of a community such as First Parish, I see how we support one another in our day-to-day interactions. How when we cultivate a sense of positive energy that we feel rejuvenated and energized in our interactions and our work together. These are the times when we can take anything on and we can make it happen. We have proven this over and over again, have we not? And it's not just projects such as solar or the terrace or the Capitol campaign in the 90s that gave us this amazing building. We support one another in our illnesses, our losses, in our joys. Do we not? This is the work that we covenant to do together as Unitarian Universalists and as members of First Parish of Sudbury, to help one another with encouragement. We help one another to move forward one step at a time, cultivating a sense of hopefulness, and at times we help one another towards the creation of a sense of faith, especially when we're stuck in a place of frustration, anger, and or hopelessness. That is our work together. And my dearest friends, as we continue one step after another towards Yule and Christmas, as we celebrate Hanukkah this week, which begins this Tuesday, December 12th, I invite us to bask in the glow of candlelight during this season and dare to say yes to living a hopeful life. Anybody biting right now? I see some smirking. I get you. But here's the thing. If you don't hope, what do you have? Cynicism? Anxiety? Disappointment? I vote for hope. It feels better. Dare to live into this life fully, with courage and hope, creating a bigger kind of joy, maybe even happiness. And always remember, hope is an emotion that gives us the energy to live despite challenges, to love despite uncertainty, and to embrace both who we are in this moment and what we may become. I invite us to take a few moments in silent reflection and prayer.